Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Good day, everyone, and welcome back to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. This is episode 100. I can't believe how fast time flies and the fact that after a couple of years worth of weekly podcasting, we've made it to episode 100. So it's going to be a bit of a different episode today, and we're actually going to take a look back over the last 18 months to 2 years worth of podcasts, picking out some of our favorite episode clips and reminding you of some of the great ideas that have come through. We've also got a couple of feedback recordings that we've received to our voicemail. Thank you very much to all those people who sent in your good wishes and thanks for the podcast. And to let us know what you've got out of it. That's been fantastic. Look, I can't thank everyone enough for all your support over the amount of time that I've been doing this. It is absolutely fantastic. I love the impact that it's having on so many teachers and their teaching. And the fact, of course, that you can listen to this while you're doing other things. I think that's one of the best reasons to listen to podcasts, because you can be walking the dog or at the gym or driving your car or whatever it is, and you can be learning at the same time. So thank you very much again for listening to all of these episodes, and I do hope you have been enjoying them. I've just got back, of course, from a fair bit of travel in July this year. If you're listening to this when it comes out in August, I've returned from Adelaide, where we had the Australian Piano Teachers Conference, and also from the United States, where I was there for the National Conference in Chicago and also the 88 Creative Keys Workshops in Denver. If you managed to catch up with me while you were there, thank you very much for coming up and saying hello. It's been fantastic to hang out with so many of you, so many Inner Circle members, of course, as well, and a number of other bloggers and teachers from around the world. I love coming to conferences and events because it is just such a great way to make those fantastic connections and, of course, to learn a whole lot of new things. If you came to my workshop, particularly at the NCKP in Chicago, thank you so much for coming along. I was a little bit worried, given that I was on at the same time as some other fantastic speakers, but it was great to have a packed out house there for my session on harmonization. And you can find out more about the sort of approach that I have to things like harmonization, chordal composing, and all those kinds of great things in my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community. To find out more about that, all you need to do is head to timtopham.com/community and you'll get all the details. And remember that as a piano podcast listener, you can take $100 off an annual membership, and that lasts you for as long as you remain a member using the code PIANOPODCAST. Okay, so today's episode, as I say, a little bit different to the usual one. I am doing a best of, and what we've done with me and my team here at the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is go through and find our favorite articles on three topics. The three topics are creative teaching, business, and what we've called teaching transformations. So some of those breakthrough little ideas about technique and teaching strategies that I know you're going to find helpful. So let me just give you a quick overview of what to expect for today. We're going to start looking at the creative teaching element of pedagogy, how teaching is changing from this idea of sort of telling the student what to do to more shared learning with teachers. We'll discuss some simple, but some of the best little activities that teachers have discussed with me on the podcast that you can do really easily in your studio. And we're going to talk about the importance of language use and praise and validation and those great things as well. We'll then have a look at business, and I've chosen this as one of the topics to focus on because we've had so many great guests on talking about the businesses that they've built. I wanted to come back to that as a topic, and we'll focus on some ideas around building multi-teacher businesses and hiring staff, how to do that in an academy, like a fixed building, and also as a traveling teacher too. We'll also talk a little bit about how some teachers are using automatic emails to lock in new clients And automate that process, I should say, of onboarding new people into your studio. So important. We'll cover those kind of marketing aspects as well. And then we'll finish up with some of these great little ideas about teaching that we've gleaned from so many fantastic guests over the space of the last 100 episodes, including some technique breakthroughs, rote teaching, ideas around motivation, and also a clip on special needs, one of my favorite podcast episodes of the last 100. There's been so many, of course. It's been incredibly difficult to choose both the topics to talk about in this episode and also the best clips to use. We've spent a lot of time on it, so I do hope it's really, really helpful. And I'd like to put out a big thank you right now to all of the guests who featured on the podcast in the last 100 episodes, even a few people who've been on a couple of times. Thank you very much for giving me your time on behalf of all the teachers around the world who are listening and who have learned from you. It's been a fantastic ride, and I do hope that the next 100 episodes are just as helpful, motivating, and supporting of your creative teaching journey as possible. So our first topic to look at today in our little roundup here is creative teaching. And we're going to start with one of my very, very favorite guests. Her name is Lindell Kennedy, and she's another teacher here over in Australia in Perth. And in this little clip that I'm about to play you, we're talking about the best approach for starting kids off, those very first lessons at the piano, and why it really is not best to teach reading first. And this has great connections, of course, with my own views on teaching beginners. And that has now been developed into my No Book Beginners course. A framework, I guess, of teaching how I teach beginners without using any method books, at least for the first 10 or so weeks. You can find out more about that by just heading to timtopham.com/beginners if that's of interest. But now let me hand over to Lindell Kennedy and why she believes that improvising is such a great way to start new beginners.
I can't imagine teaching a student reading from the very beginning. I actually can't get my head around that, because it seems such hard work to read before you have an experience of what you're reading. We've all heard the comparison between music and language, and how you wouldn't teach a child to read before you taught them to speak, right? So that just makes total sense right there. But for me, it's even more important in the arena of self-expression. If I have a student who comes to me for the first lesson, and the way I set up their lifelong music learning journey is to say, here's a piece of music that someone else has written, and I want you to play this piece of music. And if you can, you are musical. Mm. And isn't that what our culture has said? Mm. If you can play Beethoven, you can tick the box because you're musical. And that comes through reading his piece and playing it exactly as we imagine he would have played it, correctly, right? And it sets up a culture that says, I'm not musical unless I can play what a musical person who's proven because they've got written music can play. And I say, no, we are so innately music. It's part of our DNA. You can't ignore it. We live, breathe rhythmically with beautiful, perfect pitch when we speak. We don't talk like robots. And all of these things point to the fact that we are musical. So how do we get people in our Western culture to understand that? We unveil it. We allow them to take off the layers and to experience music from the inside out. And so they can say from the very first lesson, I'm musical because I play.
I can hear the passion in her voice. I just love hanging out with Lindell, because not only has she got some phenomenal ideas about teaching and improvising in particular, but she's just so passionate about what she believes in. I love, too, the word she uses, play, and the importance of giving kids the time to play. After all, we are playing the piano, right? But, you know, how often do we give ourselves or our students play time at the piano? I think this idea of the focus and the fixation on reading and performance and interpretation that is this kind of Western paradigm of music teaching is really one that we should be questioning and asking, you know, is it giving our students the best outcomes? One of the things that I love to do, you may have heard me talk about it before, is give my students unstructured practice time, or in fact, ask them or force them to try and spend at least some time every week doing some unstructured work at the piano. And that could be using some of the ideas around improvising. It could be playing something by ear that they like. It could be doing just about anything, but I want them to actually have some unstructured practice time. You can search on my blog to find out more about that, and we'll pop a link in the show notes for today as well. Okay, my second clip is from way back in episode number 5 when I had my two great friends and colleagues, Leela Viss and Bradley Sowash, on the podcast to talk about balancing the ear and the eye and talking about creativity at the piano. And as this was such an early episode, you can hear the interest in my voice, of course. I'd only really just started hanging out with Bradley and Leela back in those days, and I really had found some kindred spirits in these two who had very similar views on teaching as I did. Now, of course, I've just come back from working with them now 2, 3, 4 years on from meeting them the first time, probably at least 2 years. And so it's been great to go back and listen to this first episode when I had them on and what we were talking about back then. So the question I ask here in this first clip, I ask Leela, why is it worth spending time on creativity in lessons? Because for many teachers, if this is all new, this is going to take some time, right? So why is it relevant, and what can we do? And what do you, Leela, get out of this in your studio?
You know, if I have a younger student learning from a beginner's book and it's in a 5-finger pattern and they've just tried to play that piece that's written there on the page. And then I'll say, well, just put your hands back over those notes and I'm going to play the teacher part and you just play what you want to. And, you know, at first you have to coax them a little bit. But to me, what I think teachers will really like is when they see the light bulb that goes on in their students' eyes, because they're like, wow, that was really cool. And really, I see that over and over again. They're excited about something that they created. And isn't that what we as teachers want? We want students excited. So if I could say one thing, that would be it. It triggers those endorphins. It makes people feel good. And then they're going to come back to lessons again and want more.
I love how Leela talks in this clip about curiosity and turning on those light bulb moments for students. And, you know, it's a very simple idea that she's got, of course, and anyone can do this. If you're at all unsure about improvising or creativity, the idea that she just gave you is so easy. If you've got a student who's playing a simple piece of music and you're playing along an accompaniment part of some sort, it can be of any level student or difficulty. If you've got some kind of duet and you can refine their part down to a simple scale pattern or pentatonic melody or something like that, just get them to vamp on a few notes of their melody, not playing it exactly as written, but just making something up while you play the original accompaniment. Such an easy way to get started with creativity. So I asked Bradley the same question, and here's what he said.
Teaching creativity involves replacing the old European model of that the teacher knows all, the teacher's a master, and the student is, and so that is a necessary approach when you're trying to decipher the difficulties of notation. And, you know, you have to say, this is a sharp here, and don't forget this rest, and so on. But in teaching creativity, you switch from I know everything and student does one of shared mutual exploration. Let's try this. There's lots of saying we and let's, and what she just said, you know, how would this be with these 5 notes in a new way, not knowing what's going to happen? So at first, for teachers, that's what makes them a little insecure, because they're not sure how to teach you. It's not objective. But once you walk through that door, as you have, Tim, it's delightful. And I would venture to guess, if I may be a little bit blasphemous, that really teaching the same method year after year and the same sort of, every teacher will secretly admit that they really like teaching their 10 favorite pieces that they play pretty well. is a little boring, because when you get to page 16, you already know they're going to miss the B flat on measure four, because every student
does.
Yeah.
So
this just adds this whole element of surprises happen. It's very unpredictable, and students come up with great ideas, and you laugh, and sometimes you're befuddled. But what happens is the student recognizes that you're in there with them.
I love the fundamental approach that Bradley has to his approach to teaching too. And this, again, this changing paradigm from the model of a teacher as the wise know-all person who just tells the student what to do and corrects their mistakes, to one of shared exploration. It's about a changing relationship between student and teacher and a changing dynamic. And for some teachers who have been teaching for some time, this can be quite a challenging situation to perhaps find yourself in or to allow yourself to be in. Because, of course, when you allow yourself to share experience with your students, there are going to be times when you make some mistakes and you don't know all the answers. But you know what? That's the fun of this approach to teaching. You're going to be learning at the same time. You're not going to have all the answers. And the student is going to see what you're doing, and it's going to change your dynamic and your relationship completely. Let's move on now and talk about activities that you can do in a creative piano lesson. Now, I've got lots of blogs and podcasts about the kinds of things that I do, including my top 20 creative ways to start a piano lesson, the 12-bar blues, chord playing, improvising, vamping, you name it, lots of ideas around. But I love nothing more than hearing what other teachers are doing in their lessons. And sometimes I completely forget that, it might have been something I did with one student once upon a time, completely forgotten that it works really, really well. And this first clip is one of those moments that I had. And the guest that I had on my in this particular episode, which is podcast episode number 35, is my good friend Lynette Barney, who talks about one of her favorite simple creative teaching ideas. Have a listen.
One of the ones that I use with my students right off, and we use forever, is the heart and soul chords.
Mm-hmm. C, A minor, F, G. Yep.
Yes. It's funny because kids don't know heart and soul anymore.
No.
I have to teach it to them. Like, don't your friends play this? No. Oh, well, they used to. But we use those all the time because it's great for improvisation. Somebody plays the chords down at the bottom, maybe in a chord pattern on the piano, maybe with the Clavinova style with the band when you press on the chord. Mm-hmm. And then you just improvise.
Do you use pentatonic scale or just any white note?
Any white note usually is what I'll tell them. Any white note. It should sound good. One of Forrest Kenny's first improvisations, World Peace, it's in book one. It's actually the heart and soul chords just as an open fifth. And in F sharp.
Right.
So, and then you improvise on black
on the
notes.
Black keys. Yeah.
It's pretty fun when the kids figure that out. They're like, hey, wait a minute. This sounds familiar. So we use that a lot.
Yeah.
And then we play with, okay, well, we talk about how that shows up in pop music all the time, or modifications. And I'll say, okay, write your own pop song.
I really love this simple idea about using what's known as these heart and soul chords. And Leela Viss, who you just heard from earlier, I know uses this a lot in her teaching. And it's just really, really easy. Even if students don't actually know the original song, and most students wouldn't now, the concept is very relatable to them because it's based on chords which are often found in modern day pop music. And so I love this connection that you can make between a simple improv activity using some chords and the pop music that students are listening to. And those of you who have heard me present it all will know that I'm very passionate about making these connections for students, because if students can see the relevance in what they're playing and doing in a piano lesson to the kinds of music they're probably listening to, then things tend to become more relevant to them, and they tend to settle in the brain a bit more. Students get a deeper understanding and they just feel a stronger connection to it and want to explore it more. Lynette mentioned a book by Forrest Kinney. She didn't mention the name of it. It's called Pattern Play. It's a great series of about 5 books, I think, that Forrest put out that are a great starter for improvising in your studios. And he's more recently come out with a new self-published series called Create First. So feel free to check out those. We'll put the links in the show notes. Daniel McFarlane was my first guest ever on the podcast, and it continues to be one of the most popular episodes. And I think it's probably because, well, one, what he's talking about is just gold, some real actionable strategies around improvising with your students. But he also offered a fantastic free cheat sheet download, which I still have on my piano behind me right now. And I still use today. It is a fantastic resource. And if you want to grab a copy of that, then you just need to head to podcast episode number one. You can type in timtopham.com/episode1 and you can grab that cheat sheet. It is absolutely brilliant. Daniel is an Australian-based composer and he's the man behind Supersonics Piano, which many of you will know and perhaps have used. And he's written hundreds of appealing pieces for students. They're very pattern-based quite often, and they're very, very appealing because they're based on pop music sounds. And Daniel and I share a love of teaching around chords. And so in the clip that I'm about to play, we're talking about some ways that you can do some simple chord structures in the left hand while students improvise in the right hand. So in the first one, we're going to explore the pentatonic scale in the key of C and how you can use it for improvising really, really easily in your studio. If you haven't tried this or you're not sure what a pentatonic scale is or you just need a quick reviser, then have a listen to this.
So most people are familiar with the pentatonic. So if we're going the five-note scale, so if we're going from C, you'll just be C, D, E, G, A. So obviously a lot of folk music is based around this, and the good thing about all the pentatonic scales is that no matter which note you play, it always sounds correct. Yeah. It always sounds right. So do whatever you want. So you know, when you're improvising and you need one of your go-to scales to improvise would be a pentatonic scale. And so if you have a student, you say, okay, well, to make up your first little melody, you might want to say, okay, well, we'll just stick with these notes because you know they're all going to be sound correct. And you can virtually combine that with any sort of harmonic progression, simple harmonic progression, to get a simple melody. So a simple pop song can basically be most people know the four chord progression, the 1-6-4-5. It's quite simple. Imagine you cover all this in all your improvising and 12.
Yeah, yeah. So that's okay. For teachers, just in case they don't know, we're in the key of C major, that would be the C chord. The A minor chord, the F chord, and the G chord, yeah?
Okay. So if you want, so a student's coming in their first pop song, they want a song, something to create something, we can just use the pentatonic melody, add that little four chords.
So in that clip, in his left hand, Daniel was just playing open fifths. And I found that while students will be able to do that quite easily, keep that steady pulse in the right hand, if they're going to do some improvising with a lot of syncopation like Daniel was, the coordination will go out. The left hand won't stay in time. It's actually quite difficult doing what Daniel just demonstrated. Easy enough for us as teachers, much harder for students. So what I would suggest is that you get students just playing something very, very simple in the right hand, just on the beat, just a few notes of that pentatonic scale, and just get started really, really simply. What he's just demonstrated in that clip is where you can get to after a little bit of time with your students. One thing that's sometimes forgotten when students look into pentatonic scales is that there's not just majors, but there's also minors.
So if you take, rearrange the notes, so if we're from the C one, if you start from A instead of C, we now have a minor version, the same five notes. If we put a different chord progression under that, so an A minor chord, an F major chord, and a G major chord, we can have another little pop song.
How cool is that? So the chords he was playing in his left hand were A minor, F, and G. And just copy it. Like just play back through this little clip and play along to it so you can get an idea of how you can do it yourself. With a little bit of demonstrating, students can totally get sucked into this. They love playing around with these sounds because, again, they are so related to pop music and popular music styles of today. So teenagers and adults in particular will really love this simple approach. I couldn't help but adding one more clip from the fantastic Lindell Kennedy. Over in episode 65, which I played a little bit of before, I also asked Lindell, what's the simplest way to get students improvising at the very beginning? And we're talking now about the youngest beginners. So whereas Daniel's approach that you just heard is really, really effective for teenagers and kids over the age of 10, let's say, and adults, here's a great idea for the younger students. So students under the age of 10, right down to 6, maybe even 5. Have a listen.
Get your students on the black pentatonic. That's where we start.
So just black keys, right?
Just black keys. And here's the thing. Use the expression pedal. Just get your kids to have it down. By default, all my students begin learning the piano with the expression pedal down, so your sustain pedal, which probably now I'm creating a whole lot of angst and, But the reason is it's called an expression pedal for a reason. It gives music life, especially on the pentatonic, because we know that every black note has been, the sound waves create harmony just by using black notes. So as long as you don't fall off the logs and into the water, don't play on the white, you're fine. Start with that. And if we're talking about really young kids, please go to where they're at. Find out what flicks their switch, Are the boys talking about Star Wars scenes? Are they into that? Or are the girls into the fairies and the princesses? Honestly, musical improvisation is setting up a musical dress-up corner. So what do kids do at this age? What's their favourite activity, not only at home, but once they hit kindy and into preschool? There is always a dress-up corner. Mm. And they just flock to it, and they put on the little uniform of the fireman, and they, have a little hospital corner, and it's the playing the mummies and daddies, and it's the whole concept of role-playing, right? And what are we doing in music? We're just role-playing. We're just expressing, how does it feel like to be heartbroken? Have a look at all the titles of the million, billion-dollar music sales industry, and every title tells a story.
Don't you just love the idea of the dress-up box and that analogy? I think it is just so brilliant having that thinking about musical improv as role-playing. But it's so true, and it's what Lindell's approach is all about. The title of the podcast, in actual fact, was Composing Imagination and Creativity in Young Children. And she is absolutely brilliant at getting students to imagine and watch visuals, listen to stories, and create things from that. And, it's a little bit like, I think, an art class. And I was thinking about this when I was at the recent conferences. I can't remember, one of the speakers might have mentioned this, and he was talking about how students, when they come home from art class, love nothing more than showing mum and dad their little clay ashtray or their finger painting or whatever it is, and every few weeks they'll come back with a new project that they can show their parents that they've created from scratch themselves. And it made me think, how often do we get our piano students to do the same thing? How often do they get to bring something home for their parents to look at that they created from scratch? And in many cases, it's not often. And I would be saying, well, why is that? There are many little things that we can do, like we've been talking about so far in this podcast, that students can go home with. And hopefully it's a little bit better than one of those clay ashtrays. You can find out more about Lindell and the great work that she's doing for improvising for young beginners at innermusician.com. I couldn't complete this 100th episode special without including some clips from author and teacher Nick Ambrosino. He has had a huge impact on particularly the language use that I use in piano lessons. And I would really encourage you to listen to the full episode. It was episode number 26. It was called Relate, Create, and Educate with Nick Ambrosino. When you can, you can watch the video recording on YouTube if you'd like, or you can just listen to it through iTunes as you might be doing for this. Nick is also an expert teacher in my inner circle. And so you can learn much more about how he teaches because he joined us for a highly popular mastermind last year. So if you're interested in that and you like what Nick has to say in these next couple of clips, then make sure you check out the resource library in my inner circle. And if you're not a member, you can easily find out more at timtopham.com/community. In this first clip, we're discussing the difference between compliments and validation and how you can best give honest feedback to your students. Now, this is a slightly longer clip and so important, I think, in just making us consider the ways in which our language use affects the outcomes for our students.
So for me, a compliment has a judgment attached to it. There's a, hey, that was really good. It's also sort of knee-jerkish and sort of just you're throwing it out there. There's really no interaction. There's no stickiness to that to a kid, especially if it's a kid with who hasn't yet built his own self-esteem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I want people listening to really take note of this because I think we all do this. Hey, great job. You played that so well. It's like I've blogged about the fact that it comes out too fast for me. I have to stop myself saying good when they finish playing something, even if it was rubbish. It's just like an automatic, I'm a positive person. Students like good feedback. So that's a compliment, right? Good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that okay? And we'll go back. Remember on the side note, we'll go back to the idea about good feedback in a minute because I think there's something important in there.
Okay.
So for someone who doesn't have a strong sense of self-esteem, if I say to them, let's just take it out of music context for a second. Hey, I like your, that's a nice shirt.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say something like, I got it on the sale rack, or my mom bought it for me. They just don't know how to accept the fact that there's something good there, right? But a validation on the flip side of that, one, it takes a little more thought on the part of the teacher. And two, is it gets to stick to the student who doesn't necessarily have that belief in himself. So a validation isn't a judgment, it's a statement of feeling.
Okay. So when you better give us an example. What's a validation?
Yeah. So when you played it that quickly, I felt really excited. It was really exciting for me to listen to that.
Okay.
So it's my feeling about what you did. Now, those can go both positive, and then a negative validation is more like feedback, okay?
Okay.
So you had originally said, you're a positive person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to give good feedback. Another distinction is the difference between good feedback and effective feedback.
Yep. Go on.
Good feedback might make them feel good, but it might not be effective in making them get better.
Okay, yeah.
Right? So I don't feel my job is really to make them feel good. That's their job. My job is to provide them a course by which they can grow.
Say that again, because I reckon that was great.
Yeah, my job is not to make them feel good. That's not my job in my relationship, even with my wife, isn't to make her feel good, is to provide a nurturing environment in which she can choose to feel good or not, but that's not my responsibility.
Yeah. Okay. And for our students, an environment whereby they can do the things that they need to make them feel good about themselves and their performance. Yeah.
And when they don't, they get honest feedback from me. And that certainly create, you know, you had mentioned about create, relate, create, educate, right?
Yep.
So this applies to that simply because you can't give honest feedback to someone who doesn't feel you're acting in their best interest because they're going to get defensive.
Hmm.
Okay. So often, teachers are so interested in educating first that they forget there's a process here. One is that you have to create a level of rapport, level of relationship with someone. So there's a trust and a faith that you're going to act in their best interest.
Yep.
Then after you do that, you create an environment of learning readiness together. And then you can finally educate.
Nick goes on in this clip to talk about how this idea of relate, create, educate is just like what salesmen do. And he gives the example of a car salesman. If a car salesman just starts telling you about the amazing car engine size and the tires and how much torque it's got and how fast it goes without actually finding out what you need, i.e. the relate, then they'll probably miss out on the fact that you have 5 kids and need a car for 7 people that's safe above everything else. It goes to the heart of what I love about teaching and the importance, particularly of relationships, and so important in relating to teenagers too. If you've got teenage students, then as you'll know, the relationship is above all else the most important part of the teaching that you do. I just want to go back to and cover a little bit more about this idea of compliments. I personally, and I wonder if anyone listening does the same thing, almost automatically say great when a student has finished playing, even if it was clearly pretty terrible. It's an automatic reaction that I really have to work at stopping myself doing. They'll play something, I'll know they've practiced it and tried really hard, I'll go great. And then I'll go on and explain what other things that they could do. But now I'm really trying to stop myself from saying that and trying to give them better feedback about what they're doing. So Nick's concept here is to tell them your feelings about what they did. So instead of, great, all right, let's now move on to this, you could say, I really loved how you drew me in with that big decrescendo. And Nick has such a different take on how teachers can get the most out of their students, much of it stemming from his knowledge of sports coaching and how he can really benefit from having an approach that's more like a coach, I guess, than a master, an apprentice. And this whole idea of relating first, then creating an educational environment, and then doing the educating, so, so important. So let's dive just a little bit deeper into language usage. In one of the things that's had the biggest impact on my teaching in the last couple of years, no joke, I will never forget the clip that I'm about to play you and how it's affected my teaching. So I start this clip with a quote from one of Nick's books, and I totally miss out on the gag right at the end. See if you can get it.
And I just found a quote about this actually that I really liked from your book, and it says this. The point is that if you validate someone's performance, then you often use the word but to create a change in the performance. And the student mm-hmm. never remembers what came before the word but. So if yeah. you say, hey, that was really good, but I reckon you could go faster in that section or whatever it is. So you then go on to say, if, however, you use the word and as the invitation for a change, the student feels that he has earned the right to go on to the next part of his training and will remember the validation and create the change.
Yeah.
So that's like saying, I really liked what you did in this, the middle section of this. And what about we add some dynamics now in the next section? Is that the kind of thing?
You can do that. Or I even like to use the word as an invitation and now you're ready to.
Ah, yeah, that's great. So give us an example in context.
So hey, I really like the way you performed, this section of the piece with dynamics, and now you're ready to add it to the next section.
Yeah, that's great. I really like that. It's such a positive, uplifting kind of suggestion.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really good.
You know, my seminars, they say what comes on the back end of a butt is often crap.
Yeah. Yep. I even change it when I'm writing. If I use the word but, I'll often try and see if I can change it to end.
Did you get the gag about butts just at the end there? If not, have another listen. I completely missed it until I listened back to it a few times later on. I was obviously too focused on the serious side of what we're talking about. So look, if there's one thing that I want you to try out as a result of listening to this episode, give this a shot. If you tend to say but when you're explaining something to students, so you'll say, oh, that beginning was great, but I really want you to give it more emotion, then I simply want you to replace the but with the word and, or and now you're ready to. And I've done this in my teaching. I still get it wrong sometimes, but when I get it right, I feel really, really good. And you can use this in life in general. This isn't just a teaching thing. See if you can change around your buts into ands and see the effect that it has on your students. And you can find out much more about Nick through his two fantastic books. Can't recommend these enough. They're not textbooks or piano teaching textbooks in the usual form because they are novellas, the novels, right? And they read like a story, which is why they are so engaging. But I guarantee you'll be getting out a notepad and a pen while you read these books because they are full of gold. The first one's called Coffee with Ray, and the follow-up is called Lessons with Matt, and you can find both of them on Amazon. And if you forget all about that, then just head to timtopham.com/resources or click the tools or resources link in my menu. You'll be able to find out all of the top books that I recommend for piano teachers. And these ones are always the top rating ones that people have headed to Amazon through my website for. And of course, if you'd like to hang out with Nick himself, then you can join us in the inner circle. I'm going to leave you with a final, very short clip from Nick, which sums up his teaching approach so beautifully.
It's funny because even when they do something wonderful, one of the things I when I'm validating them, like you'll see that, you know, the kid will practice and look up at you with that wonderful smile of success, right? And often I think we miss a key opportunity to anchor that emotion. And we'll say, hey, you know, I really like the way you play that. For me, it's more. There's so much more we can use that moment for, which is, I love the way you played that, but you know what I love even more is that smile on your face, because it tells me you're proud of what you did. And that's more important than anything anybody else can say to you.
Congratulations, Tim. You have got a great ability to connect with knowledgeable speakers in a wide range of topics. I especially enjoy the practical nature of your workshops, your podcasts, and all your resources. And I can always take away at least one actionable idea or tool each time. Your membership site also, it's really attractive, it's easy to use, and it's full of resources of all types. And there's a really active, supportive community that's working behind it. So well done. Congratulations on your 100th episode and good luck for the next 100.
Thanks to Wendy Brentnell-Wood for that lovely voicemail. So great to hear from you and from many of you who left voicemails for me. It means a lot that people are getting so much out of these podcasts. So thanks again, Wendy. Well, if this was a drama on TV, I'd now be writing on the screen to be continued. Yes, we've got so much great content to share that we've decided to split this episode into two parts. So next week, we're going to be continuing our 100th episode special, looking back over all these great topics that we've been discussing so far. And we're going to have a focus on business. We'll be talking about running a studio, multi-teacher studio, hiring teachers, group teaching, and email automation and a few little things like that. And then we'll get on to our teaching transformation. Some great ideas from these fantastic guests that I've been able to share great discussions with over the last couple of years. So stay tuned. Next week, we'll be back at the same time, same place. Look forward to speaking to you then.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.